So it is so great to be here in the studio at the William Knox Library here at the University of the Pacific. We're at the Stockton campus, and I'm here with Professor Brittany Trotter. I am so excited about this conversation.
Oh, I am thrilled to have this with you.
So, Humanizing Us, you know, it's a podcast that I've launched this year. We actually are getting ready for our actual launch in, you know, a matter of weeks, but it's been a student-run, student-driven process where I've been able to kind of come together with people that I think that are change makers. And you know what I actually call them? Humanitarians in action. That's my term. Because as a scholar of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and as a leader, part of my work is to be able to recognize stories of the people who are making a difference where they're located, and then be able to kind of unearth and maybe share those stories and so that other people can get to know them. So I'm so excited to have you as our guest today.
That's completely honored.
So I want to tell the listening audience a little bit about who you are. And the interesting thing about this podcast, I learned all this from the students, that there's audio only, you know, so there's people that are going to be listening to this, you know, as they're taking their walk. But there's also this visual part two. And so we decided to leverage both. So there could be people watching the video, you know, wherever they, you know, access podcasts, could watch it on a YouTube perhaps, or they can actually just be listening to it. So just know that. So this is one of the fun things this is one of the things I love, you know, and you know this because you work with students, you're a professor. So let's talk a little bit about you. I want to introduce you to everyone because Dr. Brittany Trotter has not been in the state of California for a very long time. As a matter of fact, when I met you, I came back to my alma mater the summer of 2021, and I first ran into you that first summer. And you had just started, I think, August of 2021?
Yeah.
And I was coming to the new faculty orientation as part of, you know, making sure, because I'm also a professor of communication, and you were there, and I'm like, who is this brilliant woman? And Brittany Trotter is the assistant professor of practice in flute and program director of the Woodwind. Is it Woodwind program?
Yes.
Woodwind program at the University of the Pacific's School of Conservatory. Now, many people do not know this, but the University of the Pacific has one of the oldest conservatories in the nation. Definitely one of the oldest, the west of the Mississippi. And it is a school of music, classical music, jazz studies, voice, and a multitude of other instrumentation. When I was an undergrad here, I was one of the students that participated in the conservatory too. Did you know that?
No.
So, you know, they had a choral, you know, choral programs. At that time they had a women's chorus that was called the Ariana Chorus. And so I was in the College of Pacific, which is the liberal arts school, and I had grown up singing in church, and I had grown up singing in school choirs. And so I remember standing outside the rehearsal. I saw the flyer that they were doing auditions. And mostly everybody that was in the choir were conservatory students, but they were open to other students. And so I auditioned, and you know what I did? Because my sight reading skills were so-so. I stood outside and I listened to everything, and I mimicked it. And I think the professor called me out because he changed it and I couldn't see it. Anyways, I got in the choir. But anyways, so we have Professor Trotter here. Let me tell you a little bit about, you got your doctorate in musical arts at West Virginia.
Yes.
It's called a DMA, Doctor of Music, Musical Arts. And then you did both your bachelor's and master's degree at the University of Southern Mississippi. Bachelor's of Music Education and music performance, and then you got a master's in music. So you have been studying music all the way through. I'm going to just do a couple more things on your bio before we start jumping in. I know that you have done a workshop that it says that you did it at the 2020 National Flute Association. You were a featured soloist, and you perform in symphonies all over the world, as well as in the U.S., really merging classical music, diverse culture, and modern popular music. But you do this thing where you talk about, you engage in hip-hop as it relates, and you use the flute as a storytelling mechanism. So, Brittany, I'm going to stop talking, and I'm going to just start asking you some questions. How did you end up at the University of the Pacific?
I mean, it is such a blessing that I did. So I graduated with my DMA, like, right before the pandemic happened. So it was December 2019, and I was like, you know, as any person fresh out of college, putting my applications everywhere, and then all of a sudden, the whole world ends. And that, I always say that it's a blessing in disguise that the pandemic happened, because that allowed me to create other avenues and more creative research. And so during that, the pandemic, I was awarded a residency at this local music nonprofit, and it was me and this local hip hop artist.
And where was this at?
Oh, in Pittsburgh, PA. I was living there.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Yeah. Okay.
And prior to that, I've been doing stuff with hip hop music. I was a program coordinator for this nonprofit where we take in mostly African descent people. It's a workshop for kids as young as 10 to high school. And in that 1 week older summer program, we take them in, we let them learn an instrument, and then they also study with local hip-hop artists to create socially conscientious rhymes. And so in that week, not only do they learn an instrument and play in an orchestra, and the great thing about hip-hop music is that it's basically about like five notes is there a melody. So it's easy to teach beginners, like, you know, how to hold the instrument, and then here are the five notes you have to play.
Really? There's about five notes.
That they're just repeated over and over.
And it's all about the flow and the combination thereof, right?
Exactly.
And the rhythm.
And so I've been working with that organization quite a lot. I was their teaching artist, and so a lot of the other teacher would do like little concerts where I'm playing the flute and I'm like playing a melody to Biggie Hypnotic.
Or... Oh, I love it.
And it was so much fun to do that. And so when I got that residency with that music nonprofit, it was great to work with an actual like hip hop artist, and I took ideals and thought about like how can I incorporate this in my pedagogy, because at the time I was teaching mostly as young as 5 to 65 year olds, ranging for flute lessons. And so like I'm always like, how can I connect more, especially a lot of the beginner method books for flutes mostly do like folk tunes, and like kids this generation don't.
It's not relevant to them.
No. Not at all. And then if it's not local folk tune, it's tunes that are minstrel songs.
Minstrel songs that basically were problematic from the very beginning.
Exactly.
You know, because they were basically, you know, this caricature of the African American experience, but not for or about African Americans. It was just this take made by white folks about what they thought we were like, and then they would go in blackface and then go and do it for other white people. The whole minstrel thing makes no sense. Let's kind of create, you know, what we think black art is and paint ourselves black and then perform it, this crazy so-called black art, for white people.
You just summarize it in a nutshell.
The whole minstrel music is is beyond racist. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
That people want to go see it.
Exactly. And it's still in like beginner method books to this day. And so as I was thinking, like, you know, maybe I want to create my own little method book and now use like popular tunes and collaborate with a beat maker. So like there'd be a beat soundtrack to it. And make learning playing the flute a lot more fun.
Oh my goodness. You're brilliant. I'm so excited. So tell me, how did you land with the flute? How did the flute become your instrument? Kind of go back to young Brittany. Help the audience understand, you know, how you first got encountered this musical piece as part as your narrative making.
Well, it's kind of, I think it's a funny story as I reflect back now. I grew up in Mississippi, and I grew up, since I was young, I always had this, like, speech impairment. So, like, sometimes my W's sound like R's, or and I have to catch myself at times whenever I talk. But, like, you know, it's Southern. Like, everyone in my family, like, kind of draws out their vowels.
It's a Southern thing, yes.
Exactly. And so I didn't really have that many friends in elementary school because I was like, oh, the person with the speech impediment. So, and that was fine because I love to read and I read a lot. So in the fifth grade, the band director came into our classroom and began to talk, and he took us all the way to the auditorium where the beginner sixth grade band played. And I was like, oh, this is fun. I want to like join this. And then after that performance, we was lined up to go to different tables to like do instrument pickings. And at first I was like, oh, I want to play the clarinet. So like I started walking over to the clarinet table. And then I noticed that the group of girls that were always teasing me was at that table. And
oh, like, no, not the clarinet girls.
Yes.
That's terrible. I played the clarinet, but I wasn't one of those clarinet girls. Honestly, it was not like that in my middle and high school. But oh my goodness, they gave clarinet a bad name. But anyway, them clarinet girls.
So I'm like, I don't want to spend my my mornings being teased at. So I was walking around looking like a deer in headlights.
Yes.
And the band director came to me and she was like, oh, what instrument do you want to try? And I'm just like blanking out. And the only instrument I knew the name of was flute.
Wow.
And I said the flute. And she gave me the head joint and I made a sound instantly.
You made the sound instantly? And because a flute is a, there's a certain way you have to pitch, like blowing it in order to make it work.
Yeah. See, to say blow it like you're blowing a candle. And I blew it that way. So it's like, oh, natural.
Yeah.
Is that, oh, you have a great flute armor.
Oh my goodness. No one ever told me that it's like you're blowing out a candle. Wow. So interesting. So you selected the flute found you, because I feel like it picked you. I think the two of you found each other.
Yes.
Out of the context of your sense of engaging in typical child, and it goes through adults, unfortunately, behavior of excluding and trying to feel a sense of belonging, you didn't feel like you belong at that table of the clarinet people. And so you went over and the flute found you and you found the flute.
Yes. And it has been just a wonderful joy ride ever since. Mm,
that is such a beautiful story. So how old were you approximately?
I was in the fifth grade, so probably like
10, 11.
10, yeah.
So you've been playing the flute ever since. And you are a professional player as well as a doctoral level educator in a conservatory. And those people who don't know what a conservatory is, it is a traditional music school in a university setting, typically. How many Black women in the United States have doctorates in music and specifically are playing flute?
Very few. I can, from my understanding and knowledge and my networking, I can count it in like from my hand.
Yeah, not more than 10.
Yeah,
if you think there's 5.
About with a doctorate level.
At the doctorate level.
Probably around 5 to 10, maybe more. But like it's very
very very few. So the reason why I say that is that I don't like these ideas of when we have people that are remarkably brilliant and successful, such as yourself. I don't like the idea of seeing you as a unicorn, you know, because what that says is that somehow or another, through a multitude of various circumstances, you've been able to rise to where you're at. And so your brilliance and your artistry is definitely so important for people to see. But one of the things that I know for sure is that how many more young girls might become a Brittany Trotter, not only by them seeing you, but if they get access to the flute and have access to a music education program and have access to things. Imagine a world where there's when I ask a question like that, about how many others are there, African Americans, Black women that have at the doctoral level that are flutists in the United States, it's less than 10. You know, so I just want to thank you for just the way that you are showing up, you know, as a model for following your dreams.
I mean, like, I'm so blessed to do what I do. Mm-hmm. And like, I think about it every day. And it's so funny that you said that, because I went back to my hometown in January.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got asked to be a guest artist at my undergrad. And so in my undergrad, it's only 30 minutes away from our hometown. So I spent a day going back to my elementary, junior, and high school band program and doing little clinics. And I met this little girl who my old band director was telling her about me. And like, oh, you need to connect with her. And she loves playing the flute. When I met her, she's like, I named my flute after you. I was like,
her flute is named Brittany?
Yes.
Oh.
And like, just when I was working with her, her whole eyes, it was like, that is the most rewarding like moment in my career just far. Mm-hmm. Just working with her. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's amazing that, as you said, like, being a mentor and a role model out there, but actually going back to my very small hometown and seeing that I have made a difference, just I could tear up right now.
Yeah, it's a humanizing moment. So, you know, I titled this podcast Humanizing Us because I believe that at the intersections of our multiple identities and how we understand our stories that and our narratives that are driven, you know, and informed by our identities, I think that there are very humanizing pieces that emerges from that. So we've already been alluding to it to some ways, but to talk to me a little bit about how do you see your intersectional identities, obviously as a woman, as an African-American woman, as a professional artist, musician, as a teacher, born in Mississippi, you were born in Mississippi, and now you're working and living and producing music in California, but you're kind of going out from the world to the world from California. You know, talk about, you know, your identities just growing up. You mentioned even a disability, you know, that becomes part of the identity as well. You know, the multiple intersecting identities. How have your identities informed who you are now?
So much. Like, I am a first generation college student, and to be the first person in my immediate family to go to college and nevertheless get a doctorate degree, and that was very tough because they didn't really understand, or I mean, they supported me, yeah, but like, it was like, oh, you know, you still gonna go to school? Don't you wanna like get a job somewhere? Like, and this music thing, like, how much of a career is that? So like, it was, I have to deal with that, and then just navigating like the whole financial aid system as well, because I didn't really have like a person to help teach me other than like me asking my friends and guidance counselors for help. And so I, being that first generation college student, really helped inform how I like view my students and see them, because like there's so many of them that might be afraid to like ask a question because, you know, we, this whole like society of instant gratification where we have to know the information instantly. And so like I'm able to help guide them more and be that mentor and show them like, yes, I did not come from that much or knew that much, but I made it possible. And it's just like other things that you were saying, like I remember I was adjunct teaching at this one university, and it was an online class, and they only saw like a video of me, and that's it. But I remember this one student wrote in her her reflection that she was like, I'm so amazed that I actually have, you're my first Black woman professor at this university that I've ever been. And the fact that you have a doctorate really inspires me that I can go further into my education. And like, that's just amazing. I love just insane.
Yes.
Especially Black women just like go off and do education. And I'm so thankful for like even other popular artists like Megan Thee Stallion.
Yes.
Too.
Yes.
And it still advocate for women.
Absolutely.
To go to college. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You know, last week I was fortunate to see, I haven't been to a large concert in a very long time since COVID. And I happened to land my hand on some pretty priced tickets on the floor of an important artist who came through Oakland last week, SZA. SZA, I was on the floor, I was 11th row back. I had connections to the band member. You know, I like musicians. And oh my goodness, boy, what an artist. What a presence. You know, and to see these brilliant African-American women, young women, because she's maybe 32, 33. I was, and then all the young people, I think I was more amazed at just obviously enjoying myself. But I, because I've been an educator for 30 years, and I've worked with thousands of young people, I understand the developmental process. I just recognize how special she is, and how not just the voice and the music that everybody's kind of screaming at, but just, I just was amazed, and I was just saying, thank God that she's there, you know, and she's continued the tradition of the people that came before her, you know, and just you know, tradition of excellence. That's what I think that's what I was feeling, you know, just the connection. Don't know her personally, but thinking, how excellent she is, and how she's using her artistry and her gifts and sharing them with the world. So you do a lot of projects and presentations yourself. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you've done. You're a frequent guest lecturer at universities. Of course, you would be, obviously, at various schools. Your dissertation, because it's fairly new, was Examining Music Hybridity and Cultural Influences in Valerie Coleman's Wish Sonatine and Fanmi Iman. Help me understand, and I'm pretty smart, but I don't know if I can fully dissect that, or I can read it, but you're going to have to tell me what that was all about.
So we spoke earlier about having role models, and especially like a Black female role model in music. And so for me growing up, that was Valerie Coleman.
Tell us who Valerie Coleman is.
Valerie Coleman is a flutist and composer. She is one of the founding members of Imani Winds, which was a, at the time, a all African-American Latino group.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made this world famous with this performing and winning so many competitions, also Grammy nominated as well.
Mm-hmm.
She left Imani Winds and to concentrate more on her compositions, writing. And she has written the scores and scores of musical wind quintet for the flute, of course, other small chambers, and even orchestras. She has countless commissioned by the Philadelphia Orchestra as well. And so I have been just, to me, she is like Michelle Obama and Oprah all of this into one in like a musical form.
I love it.
And so I just
Does she know you wrote this dissertation?
Yes, I interviewed her.
Okay, yes.
And like we talked, and like when I first, like I first saw her when I was in my undergrad perform, and that has been following her ever since. And it was at a flute convention that I actually had the courage to like come talk to her, and she's like, oh yes, I know who you are. And I'm just like, what?
Look at that. You met her at the flute convention, and you're like fanning her, you know, kind of like girl fanning, and she's like, I know who you are.
And I was like very taken aback. I'm just like, oh my god, this.
Yes.
But like I heard her perform at that same convention with the Fanmi Iman piece, and I was like, I'm going to write my dissertation about her. And I'm the first one to write a dissertation about her, and see how just a prolific just career and composition and outlook. So I'm very honored. That was very scary to take that on, to like make sure that I do write by her, and to like, you know, actually do my research. But so the two pieces that I picked, so Valerie Coleman is very inspired by creative people in places and things, mm-hmm. Especially with poems. So both of those pieces are actually tone poems. The Whist Sonatine come from a poem by Fred Eggar. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the middle passage, the slave trade.
The Sonatine, is that's what it's about? Wow.
And it just, and I took that and find little motifs that kind of relates to like that whole passage and like what experience the slave would have made throughout that.
Uh-huh.
And then Fami Iman is based off of, or inspired by a poem by Maya Angelou called Human Family.
Mm-hmm.
Which talks about we are more alike than unlike,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know,
yes.
cross-cultural.
Yes.
And so I thought it was great, one, because both tone poems, it both reflect how she's inspired by events, current events, past events, poem, mm-hmm. creative people, and like I kind of use that as like what inspired her when she was getting into music, and it was like blues and gospel, because mm-hmm. she was from Louisville, Kentucky, like
yes.
Muhammad Ali.
Absolutely.
And what was her?
That's right, Muhammad Ali was from Louisville, Kentucky. Uh-huh.
And like what was her influence, uh-huh. and like what she was listening to, and as I was like researching her more, like listening to every interview she ever given,
mm-hmm.
her story, I felt like was very reminiscent to my story, so mm-hmm. I was able to connect so much more. So like writing that was just a lot of love and like very inspirational to me,
mm-hmm.
To do that.
Humanizing us, your entire dissertation sounds like it was a humanizing experience.
Yes. Just to see like just that excellency.
Excellency. There yeah. it goes again. And this excellency.
Yeah. And just and she's such a great role model and mentor to mm-hmm. me, and it was just I found out so many new things mm-hmm. from writing that. And that helped inspire me to say, hey, it's okay to put in some of my culture, my inroad,
mm-hmm.
Into what I do as a classical musician.
Yes.
Especially Western classical, you know, very European.
Yes.
And so knowing that it's okay for me and seeing how just amazing work that she have done to incorporate her own
yes.
culture, and I can do that as well between my my upbringing and experience into classical music is inspirational, and I didn't have to like fit this one little mold box,
mm-hmm.
and that was mm-hmm. something I've been like navigating throughout my graduate school.
Absolutely, yeah. Navigating the construct of the Western classical canon, which is white and Western, and basically how do you go about engaging it with a brilliant mentor such as Valerie Coleman, who has already gone before you, and lift up her work, because your dissertation would lift up her work within the field, and honor it in a way that others have not honored her, and at the same time recognizing the narratives of the other individuals. You mentioned the author of Sonatine, and then Maya Angelou, who was the author of the other one. So you actually are attracted to excellence because you're excellent yourself.
Oh.
Excellence knows excellence.
You're too kind, thank you.
No, I'm just telling you the truth. I'm so excited. So talk to me a little bit about what's coming up. Are there any flute and hip-hop, you know, things that we should be looking out for in the future from you?
Oh yeah, so the flute and hip-hop little workshop lesson was something that I thought of and incorporated to people that I was a fan of,
mm-hmm.
Constantly. And it wasn't until last summer that I actually met them in person.
Who's this?
So one is Ashley Crawford. She's mm-hmm. from Tennessee.
Okay.
Another is Justine Hopper, who's from New York. But
okay.
I've been following these two women on social media. And of course, like with the pandemic, you just felt like
uh-huh.
you became friends with someone.
Over the internet, Zoom, you're in the same Zoom
yes.
thing, and all of a sudden you're their friend. Yeah, they're my friend.
But you never met that friend.
Yes.
But they, both in their career, have been just, using the flute to do like experimental R&B and hip hop tunes and stuff. And so I thought it would be great because you're already doing this in your careers. To bring this to the National Flute Association. Also, just to bring recognition that the flute is like having a moment in hip hop music. Like any big piece that or tune that you hear that's going viral has a little flute melody.
Is it really?
Yeah.
So it's having its moment now.
Yeah.
And you're probably part of it and just helping to fan the flame just a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
So you guys, you made it, you made sure that there was a presentation at the 2022, so this just happened, National Flute Association Convention.
And we're going to do a part two of that for next summer.
I love it. This coming summer, you mean? Wow. Where is that at?
It's going to be in Arizona.
Okay. Okay. Such exciting time to be a classical musician, as well as a conservatory music education professor, and to have someone like you at the forefront of this work. It's such an exciting time.
Yeah. And I'm just so, like, again, just fortunate to be able to be in the room and have access. And this is something that, like, that is really big for me because growing, again, I'm from Mississippi, very small town. We just got a Starbucks. This is how very small.
Oh, you guys just got Starbucks?
We just got a Starbucks.
Okay, I'm following you now.
What's the name of your town again? Laurel, Mississippi.
Laurel, that's a pretty name. Laurel, Mississippi.
And so I didn't really have, I mean, like, you know, the opportunity would have been scarce compared to like what I see what my siblings are doing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, if it wasn't for music and being able to travel and do all state band when I was in high school, and then that's inspired me to be like, hey, I can travel and do stuff with music. Let me major in it. And it had led me to live in Wyoming, in West Virginia, in Pennsylvania, and now California. That's so I totally understand and recognize how fortunate and how fortunate I was to meet people with those opportunities and doors and let held the door to let me in. And that's what I love to do for my students or anyone that I meet and mentor. I would say, like, I take as many people as I can whenever a door opened for me, because, like, I would not be where I'm at if someone else did.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I love the visual of that. Bring as many as you can. You know, I do the same thing too. People ask me sometimes, what is it that you want, Mary? I said, I don't want to leave anything on the table. I said, there's a bridge that I was able to cross, and I want to make sure that as many people get on that bridge and get across that bridge as I can. I said, I'm bringing them all with me. As many as I can.
Yeah.
And isn't that part of the reason, you know, why we're here? You know, you reach heights, but you want to make sure that other people reach their heights. And you got to be able to, you know, be there. Because sometimes they need to climb on your shoulders. You know, but to create those pathways and those bridges and those ladders and whatever it is. But to make sure that they're in the room to be able to be mentored. And sometimes to be mentored by you is just to see you. You know, that's enough. There's just to see a Professor Brittany Trotter. So, what's on the horizon for you?
I have a lot of creative ideals and stuff that is on my little, my docket. One that I'm looking forward to completing and doing is having a debut album of flute solo works. The other is just continuing this research of like this cross between popular music and classical music, because there's so much there and there's so much going on. Right now, especially with Lizzo, I'm very excited.
That's right. We hadn't even mentioned Lizzo. Lizzo, that's her instrumentation.
Yeah.
Besides her voice.
I mean, she's bringing in a lot of like new young flute players.
Just seeing her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's so great because now I remember one time I went to Starbucks for coffee and this woman was like, oh, what do you do for a living? And I was like, oh, I teach and I play the flute. She's like, oh, like Lizzo? I'm just like, yes!
Like Lizzo?
Exactly. Like Lizzo.
Exactly. That's fantastic.
And that's just amazing that someone knows, because usually people just confuse the flute for another instrument.
That's right. But Lizzo's put it on a global stage for particularly for young people. Like, oh, by the way, that instrument that she's using right now is called a flute. Well, you know, before we move on, because we've alluded to this a little bit more, and you mentioned it, that you had a chance to participate in your all-band, state all-band, that led to other, you know, ideas about who you could be and what you could do. What do you think is happening? What's your thoughts about the state of music education on a K-12 level right now?
I mean, it just depends on where you're from. Mm-hmm. And that's really sad, because, like, people can, if they're in a wealthier or more established, like, place, they would have a great music
ed
education program. But if they're from a poor state, it might be even less, and it might even just be gutted.
Yeah.
And for me, the arts is what led to me being so intelligent and, like, mm-hmm. wanting to strive for more. My elementary school was a magnet school for the arts, so in course, in addition to our core classes, I had dance class, music class, art class, mm-hmm. and that was very influential in giving me to be the great person that I am. Mm-hmm. And so it's just so sad to hear in these different cases of the music or arts program being gutted for mm-hmm. other things when, like, it's just as viable as, like, athletic programs, mm-hmm. even though it might not bring in the type of revenue of that, but it fulfills you in different ways.
Absolutely. Yeah, so the divestment of the arts is, we know, is very short-sighted. You know, it's like banning books. Divest from the arts, you might as well just burn up the library. You know, it makes absolutely no sense, and it does not build and support and nurture the brilliance of children and adolescents who already have the brilliance, but they need to have a structured mechanism to allow that to come and be to its fullest fruition. Whether it's something they do it for a couple of years or do it for a few years, or they choose to do it beyond high school and then go to college and continue it on. And for some of them, that might be their professional calling. But there's so much that we can do around supporting the arts with young people to make a difference in their lives, and also contribute to a more meaningful, and I would think a more whole society, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all born as creative beings. Every child is creative.
We are. And, like music is one of, like, the Greek, like, main core subjects.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, it's viable because I feel like, as even Miss Simone had once said, music reflects our time.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for us to have that history lesson and, like, really comprehend what's just happening mm-hmm. in this moment in time, we need music mm-hmm. in the arts to reflect that. And so when years from now, when our grandchildren, our mm-hmm. great-great-grandchildren come back and say, what was happening during this time?
Listen to the music.
Yes.
Listen to the music. Read the words. Read the lyrics.
Look at the art.
Look at the art.
Yes.
It'll tell you what was going on. Wow. When you hear humanizing us, what does that mean to you?
It means patience, forgiveness, being gracious with oneself. And I think that's very important, especially just coming from the whole training with the pandemic. I feel like we need to give ourselves grace mm. and permission to be ourselves. And that's mm. permission to be ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, we strive for permission from other people, but mm-hmm. the person that matters more is ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that is kind of harder mm-hmm. to grant that. So, that's patient, being gracious, and permission to be oneself. Mm-hmm.
Professor Brittany Trotter, boy, the University of the Pacific scored big time when you said yes to the conservatory's offer to teach and to play. I am so excited that our paths have crossed this early stage of your career, because I anticipate your career will continue to unfold in beautiful and hopefully magical ways. And I can't wait to see what your album will be in the future and all the work that you're going to produce and all the goodness that you're going to do. Thank you so much for being with me today on Humanizing Us and sharing your story. And as it is at this particular stage, we have a young woman from Mississippi sitting here in Central California with us, but it's changing the world from where you're located. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Great.